to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we're not going over the top in association with Flowers Unlimited. Well, was it 2 points dropped or a point gained on Saturday as both we and Nottingham Forest maintained our unbeaten runs? It was a game not without its controversies, with a referee's performance being a major talking point after the game. This weekend, we head to Stamford Bridge, and we will do it with Fabian Hürtler in the stands after he was sent off against Forest. Chelsea, rather annoyingly, are showing signs of life at the moment, and we will have to be at our best if we want to take our unbeaten run into October. In other news, the Seagulls got off to an impressive start to the WSL season, swatting Everton aside 4-0 with a hat-trick from new signing Kiko Seike and another from Fran Kirby. And joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome a man whose commute to the Amex these days usually starts in Berlin. Please welcome back Mr. Piers Benjamin. Hello, Piers. You all right?
Hey, AD, long time. I think it was pre-COVID last time I was on here.
It has been a while.
It's been a very, very long time. So you've got lots and lots of stories to tell us about Daring Do and no stories about...
AD, it finished 80 years ago. We're okay.
Yeah, it's all good. You know?
Yeah. Don't mention the Raw.
Yeah, but I mean, like I said in the intro there, Piers, I mean, obviously, you're not actually based in the UK anymore. So coming to the games from Preston Park or Berlin, it seems to be a bit of a trek.
I think since I moved, I get in the pub earlier than I did when I lived in Brighton for a home game. Well, since again the pandemic, they don't run there used to be a lovely flight from Berlin at 9:40 in the morning. And if everything worked, you could be in the Caxton about 11:30.
Uh-huh.
Of course, that never reappeared. So the only flight's at 7 a.m. And you're in Brighton before 9, and it's amazing trying to kill time before going to the pub. It's like, go for breakfast, go for a wander, another coffee, and then it's 10:30, somewhere will be open. So yeah, all it's done is less sleep on a home game and more alcohol probably pre-game.
Given the notion of what a football away day is, I mean, obviously now it's an extended version of us going to Gillingham, because as everyone knows, a football away day is basically 12 hours of drinking interrupted by 90 minutes of terrible football.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but the difference now is where I live in Berlin, the Moritzplatz U-Bahn is a bit like the bar in Star Wars. So there's lots of people there in the morning, scum and villainry, taking shelter and cooking up, shall we say. So you start your day with people at one end of the platform doing things you don't want to know about, thinking, I just want to get on this train and get to the airport. and then it only goes uphill from there, really.
I was about to say, and then of all places you end up, it's Brighton. Hang on, talk about frying pans and fires here.
Yeah, it's like big Brighton into little Brighton is probably how I would describe it.
Okay. Brilliant. But I mean, Piers, so obviously, like being in Germany and us now appointing a German manager, I mean, is there any more coverage over there than there would have been perhaps beforehand? Or is it just like you're just an international game now and like it's the Premier League, everyone's interested?
I think it's probably the Premier League, everyone's interested. I think actually us getting into Europe and then having two players, one was on loan last season at Stuttgart in the German national squad, gave the club much more exposure. And obviously Gross going back there has probably increased that. But people are well aware of who we are. And you know, we get compared to Dortmund quite often from a recruitment model type of place, that we're a good fertile ground for younger players to go to, who then can see it, play top level football and move on. So those comparisons are there. And certainly, if we go to the village my wife's from in Franconia, there are more Brighton shirts there per capita than some villages in Sussex. Probably all down to me of giving them to her sort of godchildren as presents and so forth. But no,
now all their friends want one. And now,
you're not going to be a Bayern fan. You're going to suffer with the rest of us. It's as simple as that.
No,
Okay. Well, let's get into the nuts and bolts of last Saturday then. And we Nottingham Forest were obviously the visitors to the Amex. We saw the first league starts of the season for Purvis Estupiñán and Simon Adingra. Pedro was only fit on the bench, so Arruda started. And we saw Jack Hinchelwood start in midfield for the first time since Aston Villa. How worried were you, Piers?
A little. more that there was no Iari in the squad. I presume he'd had a knock. There was no reason for him not to be there.
He was basically illness.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, of course you're going to be a bit scarred by it, but Hinchelwood has said his preferred position is a centre midfielder, and at some point he has to be trusted there, and he didn't let us down, in fairness. I thought he was one of the better players on the park, and it creates a nice problem as they all come back. That there's competition in an area we actually probably, with Gilmore going, we're a bit, we got enough cover there. So I'll take the positive.
Well, with the injuries, I mean, obviously you've got O'Reilly to come in there, you've got Vifa to come in there. Obviously, Belabor's come in and just been, like, proved to be undroppable.
It's just they all keep getting injured, AD. It's a problem.
I mean, and given the Hinchelwood DNA, then, you know, you sort of worry about that. Oh, careful, Jack. Don't go in too much. Yeah, I mean, that previous game against Villa, you could argue that it was basically the engine wasn't really firing, and it was Hinchelwood alongside. I can't remember who he played alongside that day.
But I think it was Gilmore.
And at the time, Gilmore hadn't really established himself as he wasn't necessarily the automatic first choice at the time, and it was lightweight, and Villa did outmuscle them and outdo them and outmaneuver them. And obviously Villa being a decent side, you know, I suppose the real marker as to the extent to which Hinchelwood has improved in that time is playing against that similar Villa side. Having said that, Forest, you know, we're pretty robust. I'm going to use a word carefully. When I say robust, I mean brutal. And he stood up to it. He's certainly grown. And it's, I think since that first header against Brentford, he has grown exponentially. It's like someone flicked a switch with him. Because, like I say, that Villa game, it was sort of, you know, a boy playing in a man's game that day. But since he planted that header against Brentford in the far corner, he has come on leaps and bounds, and yeah, that's the first. I was slightly nervous him playing in the central midfield, but I'm 100% with Piers here. He didn't let us down. You're not going to have someone as good as Caicedo or McAllister that, you know, at that rate already. All right, you've got Belabor who's trying to be Caicedo and making a decent fist of it. But, you know, for someone who has had to suffer the indignity of being beasted, he's such an exciting prospect for the future.
I agree, but I will then contradict myself and say I think he'll end up as a right back, especially in the next 18 months, because I don't see another opening in that squad for him. I'd probably be proved wrong, and Marcus will remind me. and that's not the end of the world, especially the way this guy wants to play, that the fullbacks were expected to step into the centre of midfield anyway.
Yeah.
So,
which is something we were talking about pre-season, where Belabor was actually starting as a left back quite often, and then stepping into the midfield, which is what Hertzler was doing with St. Pauli, I believe.
Well, even if you remember when we played Arsenal and Hinchelwood was stuck at left back, and he had Saka up against him, and Saka really was, you know, leading a merry dance. That's not to say that Hinchelwood's not a good enough player, but, you know, when you're in an unfamiliar part of the pitch that you're not necessarily comfortable with, you're going to struggle. Plus, if you've not got the support of Kari Matoa, would you please get back and help him? but then I think that Hertzler saw there was a problem and effectively moved Hinchelwood up so far that he was near as damn it a midfielder, and spreading the... Well, he sort of effectively spread it to a back three. So, yeah, he's certainly versatile. We know that. We know he can play at left back. We know he's better at right back. But we also now know he can play in the centre of midfield.
Yeah.
I wasn't very comfortable with him at left back, I've got to be honest.
Well, yeah. You can clearly see he's struggling there because, you know, he's probably gone through. I don't know how it is they go through the academy of right. Okay, right. You prefer to be a central midfielder, which means okay, I'm going to stick you in goal. I don't know how they operate that way, but you know, if your preference is to be in the central midfield, but you know, listen, we had senior players playing at various places. I mean, Pascal Gross had to fill in at right back, you know, and when you stuck a speedy left winger up against him, then it was good night.
Hmm.
Well, it was okay. De Zerbi did say he's essentially a mini Pascal Gross, so maybe we're seeing that a little bit with the versatility. Let's hope he's half the player, to be honest.
Well, his dad was always quite versatile as well, because I mean, he came to us as a central defender, ended up playing right back, and then he got pushed into midfield quite a lot. So,
yeah. Well, I think the right back thing seems to be a sort of okay. Well, it doesn't matter what position you're going to start with, and that includes centre forward. We're going to blood you at right back.
It's a rite of passage. It's the Brighton way.
Yeah, you're not going up front, mate. You're not going to be the glorious centre forward. We're not having this £100,000 striker playing. You know, you're going to right back, mate, and you know you'll like it.
Okay. Well, we did fall behind in this game, and it was a goal we've seen before in its making. In regards to basically, it was just a simple ball down the line and on our high line, not being able to deal with it. Carlos Baleba was adjudged to have fouled Hudson-Odoi by the referee Robert Jones. What do we think? I mean, I'm still not convinced this was a penalty. I was talking on another show at the weekend, and the word modern penalty was mentioned. Do we know what a modern penalty is?
I think, Eddie, let's give it a cricket term. It was an umpire's call.
That's exactly what it was.
It wasn't going to get overturned, and if it hadn't have been given, it wouldn't have been given.
Yeah.
It was one of those.
That is the term of a modern penalty in football parlance this day. And it's just, I just find that incredibly frustrating, because, I mean, you know, we don't know what handball is anymore. And with the penalties, it's either a foul or it isn't.
Well, it was enough. It was enough.
And if there's enough shades of grey on it, then it's basically not a penalty.
And AD, I don't mind as long as they're consistent, actually, on it. If it happens at the other end, as long as he gives it, I'm sort of okay. I've given up trying to learn half the rules. Gone are the days, you know, at the beginning of the season, you knew what the suspensions were on cards. You knew the offside law. We're going to get onto the offside, I'm guessing, in a bit. But it then becomes if the referee's consistent. And again, I'm sure we're going to go into more detail on this. He certainly wasn't on Sunday.
No, I mean, it's even a case of a referee being consistent within one game. Because the law, and we've discussed this many times, because the laws of the game do actually specifically say in the opinion of the referee, because there isn't a kind of an algorithm that says, okay, this is 96.13% a foul, or, you know, the human, if you want to keep it as a human game, then you've got to go with the opinion of one person who's paid to do that. The fact you disagree with him is another matter. If you then got someone else who's looking at it five times over and then still can't make their minds up, then that will also tell you what you need to know. But yeah, so long as they're consistent in one game, Piers is right here, that's fine. But if the next referee then decides it's not, again, so long as he's consistent and saying that is not, you know, in the same thing, because like I say, it's in the opinion of the referee, it's a human game. And, you know, for everyone who sort of like complains about VAR and the automation and the automatons that run it, then the same people complain about the humanity, the humanism behind a decision that they have to make that they don't even necessarily see first time looking at the second yellow card, which we'll talk about in a bit. You know,
we will indeed. But a certain Chris Wood stepped up to take the penalty, and it was duly dispatched. And Forrest became the fifth club that he's played for that he scored against us for.
Yeah, the only good thing is it looked like James Ward-Prowse was going to cry that he couldn't take it.
Oh, that was the only thing I enjoyed.
Yeah, I mean, either of them were going to score, because when they play against Brighton, they score. So yep. It was, okay, let's just get this one out of the way, guys, so we can restart the game.
Yeah. To be honest, I didn't realise it was him. I mean, I've seen him play for other sides against us, and he's actually been quite a bulldozer.
He scored for five of them, and there's two he's played for against us where he didn't score. He scored three for Millwall, two for Leicester, three for Leeds, four for Burnley, and now one for Forest.
And the still the main thing for me is the promotion game at Walsall in 2011. We were 2-1 up, just gunning for it. You know, the Walsall had a player sent off, and about two or three occasions, Chris Wood had a one-on-one chance, and he completely fluffed it. He either skied it or he belted it straight at the keeper. Elliot Bennett goes charging through, takes his shot, and I'm thinking, well, there's no way you're going to do that. It goes in, and if you ever see the footage of it, I mean, obviously we're going mad. There's limbs everywhere. The keeper's, flat on his face, and Chris Wood just turns away in absolute disgust. My teammates just scored here. We've got one promotion, and he's got the ump.
Didn't he come out of that loan spell going, he didn't enjoy himself there, having scored like 10 goals or something in half a season? It was all it was all a bit odd in any case. Normally they keep their mouth shut. He was a little bit more vocal from what I remember. Yeah,
I didn't know that, but it doesn't surprise me because he's not one of those that comes across as sort of, oh, it's good to be back kind of thing.
Don't forget that season he was competing with Ashley Barnes and Glenn Murray as well. So he wasn't necessarily always first choice. Yeah, and he probably felt that he was on, because he was on loan from a Premier League club, he should have been first name on the team.
As Alan said, he was 19. He was sent to us as a cover player. Everyone knew that. And he still got a lot of game time because Poirier tweaked the lineup to get him in there.
Listen,
I liked him at the time.
Yeah, listen,
I'm not sure I'd do anymore. But
we have Fran Sandazza who knocked in half a dozen, and his game time can't have been more than about 20 minutes in the entire time he was here.
Yeah. I don't think my back's ever recovered from Jamie against Oldham when he scored.
What did he do?
In his not realizing his own strength way, something went crack. I don't think it's ever been right again.
Oh, I don't want to think about it. Yeah, he's we love Jamie very much, but he can be a sort of like a slightly excitable
superhuman.
Yes. I think doesn't know his own strength and leave it at that.
Anyway,
we love you, Jamie.
Okay, well, we had to get ourselves back into the game, and we duly did. And it was another goal for Jack Hintrude, who we've just been talking about. And I mean, it was. Is it too early for him to have a trademark header?
I think four goals in or five goals in that have all been that header. It's probably safe to say it's a trademark now.
Well, what I really like, especially, was that kind of body shape that he has. And I think the previous person did that, not even necessarily Murray, but certainly Ojoa did it, where you've got someone's put 2,000 volts up your backside and your body just goes into this weird shape. But in so doing, in this instance, to direct the header into the top corner. It was perfectly timed. Don't get me wrong, the defence... Forrest's defence was absolutely abysmal. He was totally unmarked. That's not to say he wouldn't have been able to do it. The way he did it, and it flew into because that cross came over, it was, if you excuse the phrase here, a bit of a floater. It wasn't pinged in. So he had to sort of, as they say, put the energy into it in order to get the strength to, well, effectively get it past the keeper. But yeah, it looked great. I think he scored the header against Brentford. There was the header against Palace.
Spurs,
but that was his right foot where he absolutely smashed it past Lloris, I think it was. That one. And I'm sure he's probably, had a go at scoring others. But yes, trademark, isn't it?
I'd like to think after the Palace one, he wasn't invited to Grandad's for Sunday lunch for a bit as well.
But it's just the way he gets up to that for that header. I'd actually like to see that in silhouette because I reckon it would be the same as the Nike Air Jordan sign. It's almost identical with the way his legs are spread. It's just brilliant. And it was it. I mean, you're calling it a flow job. I thought it was a great ball from Van Hecker.
It was great, but my point is, and actually, just thankfully, one that cleared the first defender because some of our crossing, well, it's nice to know we've got another manager in who isn't teaching our players how to cross the ball properly.
Yeah. So are you saying we should put Van Hecker on corners?
That's not a bad shout, is it? I think he's that good. He'll take the corner and
yeah, and start a fight as well somehow. Yes. In the whole thing without it being his fault.
Okay, well, I mean, so that made it 1-1, and we started to create a few more chances. A lot of them created by Karu Matoma, who was looking to start, like he was starting to get back into himself a little bit. I mean, he's been quite hot and cold this season, but I think I really enjoyed his performance on Sunday.
Yeah, you're right. But then, let's put a negative on it. I thought in that first half, Esputinian didn't look fit in the game at all. So Matoma was having to do an awful lot on his own. You know, I mean, when those two click and the overlaps are there, as we know from that, you know, first half of De Zerbi time, they're unplayable.
Mm.
So I also think, yes, he's been hot and cold. He's had Hinshelwood there with no natural left foot. And a coming back Purvis, shall we say, who needs to get up to speed because we have competition in that position at last as well.
Mm. Well, Kelly Oglu, I was surprised we didn't actually see him on Sunday actually because
anyone who signs for us immediately gets injured
against Wolves.
he's got to get past his new signing injury first.
He had that. That's why I missed the Arsenal game. But the international break took it out. So for once, it didn't affect us too much.
Exactly. Now, your point about Purvis returning, yeah, I think there's a lot of players who do, when they do return, do look a bit rusty. And Purvis, sadly, is one of them. I mean, Webster's another one, sadly. But he does look a bit rusty. And I think that also it's the case with Matoma. Though, as much as we're saying it's the best we've seen him for a long time, don't forget he missed, at least the third of the season. With a very unusual football injury, a back injury. And he seemed to be playing a little bit gingerly in those first three or four games for us. But certainly the second half, where Purvis actually sorted himself out a little bit. And then after a while, it was just a case of, right, you know, yeah, Karu calls in the havoc that we know he can cause.
Yeah.
I mean, with Karu, a lot of it is down to that sudden change of pace, which just leaves defenders were dead, which he's been slowly recovering, and actually he was Sunday he's actually starting to come inside a little bit more, I'd noticed, rather than staying on the trying to go outside.
He was playing with a lot more confidence, that's the point, and a confident Karu Matoma is actually quite frightening.
But it was Matoma who was failed by Aina, and we were talking the other week, Al, about when was the last time we scored direct from a free kick?
And it was McAllister against Leicester.
We have a new stat. We have a new stat.
I think someone pointed out it was either our coming, which one was it? It was only our fourth or fifth direct free kick we've scored since we got promoted, which isn't a particularly good stat, really.
I'd like to compare that with other clubs, though, because it's not something you see an awful lot these days.
No, it's not. No, it's not. But it doesn't help that when these stats go, that Lewis Dunk likes to step up to the mark. I mean, that completely obliterates the stats. Piers, what's your take on Lewis Dunk taking free kicks?
I think we're so committed on it, we've got to let him carry on because one goes in eventually.
But he has scored one.
Yeah, but the keeper was looking the wrong way and I think it hit somebody on the way in. I think there's enough set piece talent in that squad. We don't need Dunk trying to take the lever off the ball every free kick, as was proved on Sunday. It was Sunday, wasn't it? Yeah. I'd rather Dunk didn't take them, but he's the captain.
The time that he should is when we're 6-0 up in the last minute. I'm all right with it.
Exactly. But you're right. I don't know how many go in direct anymore.
It's an interesting because I was talking to a so-called expert on this, and though it was actually similar to what Vic Bragg was saying to us a couple of weeks ago on the show when we were talking about how players that were too small. All of a sudden, we've got players like Kante playing like in at the top level, and And he was saying that's because of the pitches. Now, someone was saying that we're not seeing as many direct free kicks anymore because the pitches are so much better. Because the people were just like taking the free kicks from the edge of the box because they couldn't do anything else because it was like playing on a rutted field.
I think it's more the fine margins, the stats and everything in it that you look, the goalkeepers are coached where they're going to put the ball. We know that's on penalties, but don't tell me it's not the same on set pieces and so forth. And it, just the game's developed like that.
But I mean, Welbeck did step up to take this one and he did duly dispatch it. Now, if that's your goalkeeper, Piers, would you want him to be doing better on that? Because it was an absolute shambles from a defensive point of view.
Yeah, we got to be careful here because we've had, especially with our goalkeeping rotation, some calamities in
Yes.
there as well. But yeah, a top level keeper should have that covered. As simple as that.
As soon as it went in and I saw the keeper hadn't moved, I'm thinking he's too central for the goal. And then when you see the shot from behind where the free kick is taken, so therefore you've got the in line at the camera line, you've got the free kick take of the wall and the goal. You're thinking, I can't see the keeper. I don't know that the keeper's there. And you think, well, the wall in theory is, and I know they talked about this a lot on Match of the Day.
Oh, yeah.
The wall
Shay Given's
is
despair
supposed
was
to cover
fantastic.
that side. And the goalkeeper sort of covers the middle and the other side. Now, if the free kick taker knocks it over the wall, because as they say, once it's past the last defender, the keeper has no chance. So, yeah, if it goes up and over the wall and into the corner, then it's brilliant. But if it's gone to the corner that the goalkeeper is supposed to be patrolling, I think that's the criticism of him is even if it was just moving a foot to his left, or a step to his left. Then he'd have had at the very least, a better chance. But because he didn't move, that seems to scream that he couldn't see the free kick being taken, and that's not particularly clever.
No, agreed.
Okay, well, I mean, it was at this point is when we should have been trying to push home our advantage. And yet again, ladies and gentlemen, I give you Brighton and Hove Albion. And
Well, the thing that actually stopped us from pushing home our advantage after that free kick was half time.
yeah, but then in fairness, Nuno made those three changes, which seemed brave at half time. And I thought they lost even more shape.
Yes.
And we were masters of our own downfall in the end. I know it was a great save from Welbeck when he danced through not to make it 3-1, but we had enough openings on the edge of the box where we were flicking it around and looking for one more pass rather than someone actually hitting it, that it comes back to it may not have gone in, but if you don't have a shot at goal, you're not going to score one.
No, exactly. I mean, it's like,
And that was us on Sunday, I'm sorry to say. And then the inevitable was going to happen, as did.
But I mean, now, Al, we were talking about this on the show last week about the fact that we're just being so guilty of overplaying at time. And when if a shot opens up, you should take it. I mean, I suppose it's easy for us to say when we're up in the stands and we're seeing the opportunities arise. But you know, it's sometimes it's just quite blatant that you know, just kick the ball at the goal.
Well, yes and no. Yes and no. I mean, the point is that, and this is what happens, and it's the same with any sort of attacking team, is that if you take that shot and it hits the first, somewhat carelessly, it hits the first person, even 5 yards away. If you as opposed to say lofting it a little bit, but you belt it against someone and it rebounds to someone, there's your breakaway. So if you're going to take a shot, you've got to know that there's going to be someone covering you behind. Now, it might only be two or three defenders or a couple of midfielders and what have you. So there's this science. As much as Piers was talking about the goalkeepers are trained, there is a science to when you can and can't shoot. And it's obviously if there's a gap that you see and you're confident of taking it, by all means, yeah. But you also got to know that if your shot is actually going to ricochet off someone because it's not as accurate as it could or should be, then your defenders are in trouble. So yeah, when you're on the halfway line on the side of the pitch, you can't necessarily. In fact, no one can necessarily see all the angles. The only person that can is the one who's taking the shot because they've got that line between where they've got the ball and where they want the ball to be. it sometimes looks as though we're trying to walk it in, you know, going through, if you excuse the pun, a forest of players. But there are all, you're right, there's other times when, you know, pick out that shot. Ferguson's good at that. He'll have a snapshot because he's kind of one of those, you know, 18-yard sniffer strikers who will want to take a shot because he doesn't want to faff around anymore.
Yeah. And then Cissé will, because he doesn't want to pass to anyone.
That's true. That's true. But I mean, I've got that chance that Danny had as Welbeck channels his inner Ricky Villa, but couldn't find the finish.
Well, I thought the keeper just did very well. I mean, let's face it. Yeah. I mean, it was probably no more than 2 feet away from him by the time he managed to get his shot away. So yeah. You got no space for a. You just got to hope it doesn't hit him, but it did.
Yep. Yeah, I think it was a good save. Keeper did well there.
Yeah.
And that brings us to this season's Bete Noir, the master of our current downfall. The High Line, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, we've been done by it, and it's happened in pretty much every game so far. It's just so easy to defend against. And it's, I mean, I guess it's high risk and high reward, but If you're not taking your chances at the other end, then it becomes even more of a high risk, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a bit of context. It was a hell of a ball by Gibbs White to get him through, but this style is going to kill Dunk in the end. Yes. He's probably not got the legs to chase his guys back as we're being seen, and teams could exploit that. I think there's also a little bit here, AD, that they're not quite used to the system yet. It is a tweak on De Zerbi's system. There's less probably pushing it around the back, but out of possession, this can be a problem. And hopefully it will improve. More time on the training ground this week. They've had a full week. No League Cup game or anything. Mm. But it is a concern at the moment. Absolutely.
I mean, again, they did a very good analysis on Match of the Day 2 after the game about it's not just, I mean, it looks terrifying. It looks as terrifying as every bit that we tried to do with, like, say, under De Zerbi, where we're playing out the back. You think, you know, it looks as though we should be doing this, but it's not necessarily the high line per se. It requires the midfield ahead of them to be doing a given job. And if one player is even 3 yards out of place and the ball can be played through, then you're in trouble. So, again, we're back to the risk and reward. But it's like, I think it was a question you asked just before we started, though, Piers, and maybe you want to kick this part of it off, is have the players completely and utterly, not necessarily not bought into the Hertzler style, but are they still learning it?
I think they're still learning it. I just going back before I go on to that, I think a fit FIFA in that team removes some of these problems on the high line because he plays a bit deeper. He's a bit more regimented. And as we saw at Everton, once he got into it, well, we had a lot of control in that game. The next point, I think even year pre-seasons are a bit of a waste of time because you go through the first 3 or 4 weeks of it with half your team on holiday still because they've been in international tournaments. And if you look, we went to Japan. And there were several players in that squad who did quite well, but were always going out on loan. Whilst we waited for people to come back, we waited for Gross and Undove's futures to be settled. Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't have pre-season, but what I'm saying from a new manager trying to bed tactics in, that must have some impact. Mm. That your senior players, the spine of the team wasn't really there in reality. Brooklyn was injured, Dunk was on holiday. They actually hadn't signed one. O'Reilly hadn't even signed. So it must have some impact. And even if we look back to De Zerbi, what the sea change was actually that Qatar World Cup, because it gave him 5 weeks with a number of the squad to get his ideas over and have another pre-season. Because we weren't, I know we'd beaten Chelsea 4-1, but we were blowing hot and cold. Mm. We'd also drawn with Forest and I can't remember the last, was it Villa we lost to? In the last game, and then we came back from that, and it was bang, Southampton away, and off we were flying. Mm. So there is a little bit of, I just wonder he's obviously a very, very tactical manager. That is obvious, It's not dissimilar to De Zerbi and the risk and reward, but the high line, rather than drawing the player on, is where he wants to go with it. And that's going to take time. And Sampaoli played 3-4-3 often. He doesn't have the squad to play three centre-backs, in fairness. He has to play wingers due to our buying every young winger in Europe and South America up. But at the same time, as I say, they'll come back to, I think Vifa is the key in this. It will be him sitting in that slightly deeper role and dropping into the back, into a back three at times. And you'll see it start to settle down. He's been injured after Everton. AD, you were there, weren't you?
Yeah, yeah.
The first 15 minutes, it was like, oh, goodness.
He was giving the ball away a lot, wasn't he?
And then something clicked and he controlled that game after that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I predicted him to be player of the season. So I really hope that you're right.
Well, I think our ultras, as they like to call themselves, have missed a trick here and not run a theme of the Dutch Masters this season. Just steal it from the Orange Army at the Euros, who had the four busts in front of the bus. But this is the year of the Albion Dutch Masters, potentially.
Well, obviously, we've got, yeah, Verbruggen, Veltman, Van Hecker, and Van Hecker is the one who I've predicted to be player of the season, and he hasn't let me down just yet. Although that's the funny thing, isn't it? It's, you see the how well you think they're playing, and then Match of the Day will do a tactical analysis on it and realize that, you know, Van Hecker shouldn't have been here. Well, he was blaming Van Hecker, but I think that I thought if anything it was Veltman who was too far back.
Veltman played him on side.
He played him on side. You could see them trying to do this, and there was that kind of them not acting in, and I think that that whole offside trap, and that's, let's face it, is, high line is the current word, alongside modern penalty, which incidentally for me is as bad as fell over under his own momentum.
And press, don't forget press, because none of us really know what a press is. I think pressure on the ball.
It's just go and tackle him if you can. Although I am quite impressed with the speed of which the players, I think it's even quicker than under De Zerbi, the speed of which the players are herring around to try and get the ball back. But yeah, they're still not. It's like I say, I think we discussed this actually, AD, ourselves, is that because there's the new manager, because not everyone's had the pre-season, and because, you know, everyone's been injured before that, that these things will take a bit of time. Now, I think we nominally said the end of September. Now, if the second half performance, notwithstanding the defensive cock-up, if the second half performance is anything to go by, then you can see the improvement. Certainly going forward, you can see the improvement. The fact we didn't stick the ball in the onion bag is not necessarily my main point. Yeah. It's the fact that I think we are in for another season of us comfortably controlling a lot of the games with us keeping possession of the ball.
And the one other thing, let's be clear, we are unbeaten.
Yeah.
We have drawn two home games that, on paper, we looked at and went, that's probably our points in that opening series, because we had a stinking start fixture-wise, and we took 7 points out of it. So luckily we did that, but we are still unbeaten as well under a new manager in a new country with a very, very new squad.
I'm
just going to rewind back to the high line thing. But I mean, we did talk about this. I mentioned this just before, actually on the season preview, because we're just coming out after that game against Villarreal where we were constantly undone by the ball over the top, and that's not. And we've had a bit more time under the new manager. We've had a little bit more time on the training pitch, and we're still just easily done by a simple ball over the top, and that is a concern for me.
Yeah, but you do have to go back to Piers's point: is that not everyone has had that pre-season training?
Well, you're right.
I
mean, Dunkey didn't play. Until that Villarreal game, and he's looked a little bit rusty. And
don't forget, we've also had another international break in between time. So that starved hurts a lot of the players again.
Plus the League Cup. This is one of the first weeks in the season where they've had 5 or 6 days on the training ground. Because we actually do play Monday, Saturday, Tuesday in the early part. And the other thing, actually, and this is squad evolution, there's not a lot of pace in that defence. There never has been, not needed to be. If he's going to play like this, you may see in time a pacier centre-back signed, or if it's someone like Noel Atom coming through, slip into that
he's
role.
He's still here.
Yeah, he's one of the ones that's still here. I've got him down to be a star radio. I've got this based on nothing other than he's German, and I have to back the German
and his
players.
Name, surely.
Yeah, and because it's great for the headline writers. Andy Naylor must be sitting there going, come on, get him in there.
Oh, yeah. He actually sounds like a Marvel comic character, doesn't he?
You know, Noddle's pass splits the atom. It's all there, isn't it?
I'm not convinced he's still here. I think he might have gone.
No, he's one. I'm sure he is still around the place.
Yeah. I mean, and one of the kids who, I mean, I think he's been on the bench. I mean, that's another point I was going to say about that, is that seeing who was on the bench for the first time in a long time, it was none of what I would call the kids. Now, obviously, Hinshelwood is one of the kids, Believer's one of the kids in that sense, but not one of those who ostensibly is still an under-21s player or one of those who you'd have thought is actually going out on loan. That was a full-blown senior bench as well. Yep. And that hasn't happened for a long time.
No, not probably since pre the Europa League games when the injury started.
Yeah, okay. Note to self, try not to play in Europe unless you really want to. Anyway, no, it's mentioning the likes of Noel Atom and seeing the under-21s when they're playing. And I am still going to try and do this triple on Saturday week. So, the weekend of watching the women at Crawley, 12:30 kickoff on the Saturday, the under-21s at Lancing against Palace at 4 o'clock, and then the next day, Spurs at home. So I'm going to see if I can do that.
Good. Well, one person who did have an interesting afternoon, and I mentioned this at the top of the show, was that the referee was a little bit psychedelic in some of his decisions, and he was terrible for both sides, to be fair. But it was, I mean, nothing gets the crowd going like a bad referee, and it kind of, it did. But the major talking point, I guess, was the sending off of Morgan Gibbs-White. Now, yeah. I have absolutely no problem with this whatsoever. I'm saying that's a borderline red, that second challenge, actually.
It was a straight red for me to start with. He's gone over the top of him. His studs are up. And Rob Jones trying to go, he went over the top of the ball, is rubbish. The studs were up. But he didn't want to give the yellow card. We were convinced the fourth official was in his ear going, give it before the VAR.
They confirmed it. Yeah. It was Anthony Taylor, who we've got history with anyway.
Forest.
Anthony Taylor there was a school of thought that if it was the other way around and he was on the pitch and Robert Jones, the younger ref, was saying the same thing, would he have done the same thing? But
he'd have sent Dunk off for something in any case. So
exactly.
it was a red. I'm sorry, it wasn't even a second yellow. The second yellow is get out of jail free. He's gone, oh, I've got to. It was a red card. He's gone over the top of him. It's a dangerous challenge. The guy struggled to get up afterwards.
Yeah. I mean, he ended up playing the rest of the game limping. And yeah, you know, I think.
I think the controversy was the fact that the ref was saying he won the ball. He won the ball.
Well, this is it. Why? And this is one of those things that just drives me around the twist. And I think it's that kind of lazy attitude towards what football is that it's always been the case that the referee has it within his locker that he can change his mind. He can give a corner and think, oh no, I've cocked that up, it's a goal kick. He can do that. He's allowed to. So when he says, he got the ball, and signalling he did that, I mean, it is a poor decision for him to say that in the first place. The beef seems to be is that certainly the Forest fans on social media are saying, how come VAR got involved? Well, it didn't, because it can't, because unless it was actually... Unless VAR could have gone back and said, actually, you want to have a look at this as a potential red. But you can only really do that again as a howler. And so it's Anthony Taylor. And I've got Forest fans on social media saying, it's not the job of the fourth official to tell the referee this, this and this. It absolutely is. Yeah. It's what, you know, the referee needs as much assistance as he or she can get. And if the fourth official sees something that the referee doesn't, and I'm thinking... Even on the most basic level, that time that Roman Vancelo got sent off playing against Burnley, you remember when we were down to 9 players after 10 minutes? It was the fourth official who it was the fourth official who told the referee this has just happened. And you know, everyone else had not seen it. The fourth official had, because they can. I've no idea. Let's say the only controversy is, should it have been yellow or should it have been red? Not by the fact that the referee initially got it wrong and then was, you know, recommended to change his mind.
That's he had the easy get out, just a second yellow. Because it was definitely a booking. I mean, yeah, I think it was a red. I think he wasn't in control. His studs were up. And that's a red card if you go through the laws. And that's one of the better laws.
Why is he making that tackle there anyway? It's on the halfway line. No one's going anywhere.
Well, actually, if Pedro had won it, it would have gone flying on. I could see why he wanted to make that tackle, because it wasn't exactly last ditch. But let's put it this way. If Pedro had won the ball and got past him, then he's got 30 yards clear. So there's that. The other thing about that is their attitude. And I'm talking about Forrest generally, is certainly the manager, and Gibbs White himself, because his first yellow card was for pulling back a player. It wasn't a shirt pull, but he grabbed his shoulders and kind of pulled him back. He went, I saw the footage, he went ballistic at the referee. And even the commentator said, well, I've no idea why he's complaining. It was a clear yellow card. It's as yellow can be. And so you got this then screaming attitude. The first thing he did once he clattered João Pedro was to get up and say, I got the ball. He high-fived his man. And you think, what are you doing on the pitch? You're a decent, or you can be a decent footballer, but you certainly don't know the laws of the game. You're mental, mate.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just ranting here. Sorry.
No. I do actually agree with you there. And I think they were a typical time-wasting team anyway. They were cynical. And we'll get to that in a minute, because then we've got the last gaffe of the referee with the injury time at the end.
Let's look at the other two sendings off on this then, because obviously after the like Gibbs White did get his red, it deserved red in everyone's opinions, which is right. Nuno and Hertzler got their marching orders as well. Now, I saw Nuno completely lost the plot and he was pointing angrily at everybody, but I couldn't see that Fabian was doing anything.
No,
they were saying it's for poor attitude, is the official line that the FA put out. But
I can't see
what Fabian did.
What does poor attitude mean?
There was possibly some choice use of Anglo-Saxon language, I would say.
Ah, he should swear in his native language. This is the thing.
Exactly. Yes, nobody.
Well, this is it. Unless it's one of those, like when De Zerbi got sent off at Spurs, where you can see that the bench itself is being a bit rowdy, and there's that now that rule of, well, if they can't work out who it is that's misbehaved, then it's the manager that cops it. That's the only thing I can think of, because Hertzler's just standing there. Don't get me wrong, the angelic thing is actually, I really hope it works in his favour, because he's got that sort of angelic look on his face where Nuno looked like he was going to just sort of gob at everyone.
And if he hasn't got it under down yet, he needs to spend some sessions with Joel Veltman, who is the master of it.
Outhousery. We asked our Dutch friends what if they have a word for outhousery. They do not.
Okay, Peter, so you want to talk about the injury time. Talk to me. What upset you about the injury time?
Well, one, it was more than 6 minutes. It was way more than 6 minutes. There were, all right, they made three subs at half time. They made two more. We made three windows. There was a goal. There was a sending off. There was a managerial punch up. There was general time wasting. And then he put 6 minutes up. But not only that, they then started time wasting in the 6 minutes. And on 5:59, he blew the whistle and was off that pitch as fast as he could be. It's again, we come back to consistency and it's not there.
Well, it wasn't
Would you like to see an official timekeeper who isn't the ref?
I don't like giving FIFA credit. I don't like giving any of these. But in the 2022 World Cup, they actually got this down to a T of, we're going to actually play the injury time. And all of a sudden, we're getting 9 minutes at the end of the first half. And the players realise they can't do this. And it settled down. This season, And in the Euros, for some reason, we've gone back to the referee's discretion on it, and it allows time wasting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that one of the things that came back was when every time there was sort of like 6 minutes in the first half and 10 minutes in the second half, you think, well, it's you're more risking players getting injured because they're out there for that much longer. But as you say, a football match is never 90 minutes. I mean, this whole thing, Sky used to do it when they first got the Premier League, is they say how long the ball was in play. And the ball is rarely in play longer than 60 minutes in any given match.
Yeah, and if the players want to avoid injury because they're playing 15 minutes injury time, stop messing around.
Yes.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
Okay, so but the final whistle did go, ended 2-2. Are we seeing this as 2 points dropped or a point gained? Bear in mind, both teams are unbeaten. Obviously, Forest went to Liverpool week before and won. Is this like the traditional Brighton Hove Albion do really well against the big sides and can't beat the sides we're meant to be beating on paper?
Two dropped. We had chances to win it, and if we'd got the odd shot away, and then we played 16 minutes against 10 men, it's points dropped. The Ipswich one I can chalk off. It happens. And you could kind of tell after about 15 minutes when we're not going to score today. That wasn't the case in this one. This was points dropped.
Yeah. Okay. We had chances to score. We had chances to take them apart. You know, there's a similarity between Forest and Ipswich. I think, obviously, Forest are that level further ahead. But I also take it as a massive compliment. Even though they're not offering it as a compliment, but I take it as a compliment that there are more and more teams. And do you know what? I'm actually going to include Arsenal in this, who have a mindset when playing against us, and it's not to take us on, it's to have a certain defensive consideration. When Declan Rice got sent off, I mean, this must be some kind of record that got three players sent off against us in the first, five, six Premier League matches. And only one of them actually had a good.
You're thinking of Ashley Young, Grace,
to acknowledge
you've forgotten
it.
About him.
No. I was thinking Ashley Young's the only one that there wasn't any controversy over.
Right.
He knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
We're getting respect off opposition sides.
Yes.
Yeah. Is essentially.
Yes, that's exactly. We are getting that respect, and like I say, Arsenal did that. They tried to hit us on the break. In a lot of cases, the tacticians will tell you, all right, you're going to play it down. And Gus Poyet used to do it, admittedly, in the third division.
Yeah.
Gus Poyet used to do it, that he wouldn't change a thing. Everyone just sort of had to step up a little bit more. Clearly in the Premier League, and certainly against us, that's not the case. And I say Arsenal really, I won't say they parked the bus, but you know, they were certainly looking for a spot.
Well, I mean, again, what they needed to do, Arsenal needed to do is with a couple of balls over the top. But other than that, they shut up shop and they have what we hold.
Yeah,
I mean, David Raya, he must have some real problems with his muscles because he keeps getting cramp at the end of the game. I mean, I'm really feeling for him now. It's obviously a
copyright best
issue.
Goalkeeper in the world. Yeah.
Okay, well, you're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on our podcast. We're brought to you in association with brilliant Flowers Unlimited. Alan, where can you get your flowers from?
The ground.
Yes, you can pick them yourselves.
You
tulips
can.
To Amsterdam.
If you
we can do it with our four Dutch masters.
When you mention flowers in Dutch, and then I actually think of Summer the First Time, which is the one song that without embarrassment can rhyme mint julep with tulip. 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. That's where you'll find Flowers Unlimited. Dave Costa, long-standing Albion fan, kindly offering every single Albion fan, should they wish to have their floral needs met, 20% off just by quoting the fact you got a season ticket. It's very kind of them to sponsor the show. We will be having it where our ex, Phil Shelley, will be giving us floral shirts. And I don't mean floral shirts as in really disgusting things that old jazz people wear that once they hit their 60s and they still have their ponytail. I'm talking about flower-based club crests and what have you. So if you've got any flower-based football teams that you know of, or those that have flowers on their crest, let us know. But Shirt of the Week will be returning at some point in the near future, but it will be floral-based only.
It will. Like Heronveen is a classic example of a floral shirt, isn't it?
I don't know, is it?
Well, yeah, no, well, I always thought it was love hearts they've already had. They had dotted all over their shirts, but it's actually tulips.
Is it now? Makes sense. Makes
Yeah,
sense.
there we go.
One thing I do want to say, because we're very, very close to the end of the show now, is once again, Albion beat Everton. I went up to Crawley to watch the women play. I think that I'm going to say this is that the club has obviously spent millions on facilities and on new players and actually making sure that it's actually got its place within the women's the rising ascending football world of women's football. But for years, we've been not good. Now it's only one game, and it's not as though Everton were rubbish, but I saw a complete sea change of both style and quality. When we played against Everton, we won 4-0. And Kiko Seika, who seriously knows how to score goals, brilliant hat trick. Wonderful to see Fran Kirby. We hadn't seen her since we saw her at the Amex playing against Norway. A cut above
Spain
and
against Spain.
against Spain. Both. Yes, of course. Yes, I forgot about that second game. How could I? And that was the more exciting one. So yeah, the future is looking brighter for the women's football team. Like I say, it is one game. Hey, we're top of the table. And yeah, it's I would try and encourage those to come do it, because as much as the club wants its new stadium for the women, and I think that something like that would be a bloody good idea. Because of the club's reluctance to host them at the Amex, because you need 10,000 to break even, and the women just aren't getting those numbers. I would say, look, come along. There is some decent football to be had. It's
Yeah.
not men's football. It's not Premier League football. Check your call in at the door if you think that's what you're going to get. It's not. It's a team that's representing Brighton and Hove Albion, and they're pretty
Sport
good
the
at that.
badge.
Isn't there also, though, with the Amex, Alan, that they can only play X number of games there? Wasn't that not in the
Yeah.
original rules as well? Which,
That was then, wasn't it?
yeah.
so no, then they did
It,
expand it. But are they
yeah, but
playing back?
Piers, in those original rules, it also said we weren't allowed to have Munster trucks either.
Yeah, I'm always a bit gutted about that. And we weren't allowed to expand it, and within a year, 12,000 new seats appeared. I know, I know. But Alan, are they playing at the Amex this year? My knowledge of it isn't
Yes, we've
good,
got
I'll
the
be
two
honest.
games coming up. We've got
Next
Man
three home games
United,
are, yeah.
and I can't remember who's the other one. Leicester,
Well,
is it?
with Villa first, then Man U,
Oh,
then
Villa.
it's West Ham at the end of November. Looking forward to all three. I mean, it's kind of weird that I think if we're playing the top clubs, then Crawley, I mean, especially if we're playing Arsenal or Chelsea, they bring a lot down. So Crawley wouldn't be able to cope. But we're still struggling to get, I think our record attendance is still 5,500. That said, it justifies a new stadium for the 10,000, a 10,000
Yeah.
seater stadium. But I mean, it's interesting that Arsenal are playing at the Emirates all season. Didn't you say
Yep.
Leicester and Villa are playing at
Yeah,
their home
Leicester and Villa are
men's
playing
game?
all of their home games at the main stadium as well. And I think there's another one that I can't remember. But I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, if playing it at the Amex, people will come along, and if they enjoy it, they'll come back, and then you get into the habit of going, and
Well,
then
this is it. It's
it grows naturally, which is basically what was happening when they were playing at Lansing. More people, people were going, the team was getting better. The attendances started to grow naturally. Then obviously they had to ship out to Crawley, and they lost all that momentum they got, and people got out of the habit of going.
absolutely. I mean, but if they do play at Amex as often as they can, then but I think it is that chicken and egg thing. Do you get the crowds in order so that you get better football, or do you have to have the better football in order to attract the crowds? And I suspect it at the moment is the latter. And if the women play like that, and it's seen that they're playing like that, then the numbers will start to grow almost just by automation. Are we there yet? It's hard to say. Everton are not the top strata. A 4-0 victory against sides that we've in the past struggled to get past, and looking so comfortable and convincing, it gives me sort
Yeah,
of great hope for the future of the
but I mean,
women's team this season.
just by signing someone like Fran Kirby, I mean, it automatically adds a few onto the gate anyway, because it's like,
Absolutely.
she's a massive name in women's football, particularly winning the Euros with England,
And we got
and
Nikita
obviously
Paris as
getting
well.
Nikita Paris as
Yeah.
well. These are big names within the women's game, so it's going to add numbers onto the gate, and if they can push on from that 4-0 victory at the weekend, It can only bode well, you know. And like the end, it's good for both the men's side and the women's side to both be successful.
Yeah, that said, we're playing Manchester City away this weekend, so.
But as for now, that's all we've got time for. So thank you so much to Piers Benjamin. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been Ailey Packham. This has been the Albion Raw on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thanks for listening. We'll see you all again next week. Bye.
Dream in the distance, a scream, advanced, entranced, taking only a chance. In and out my mind goes. Dream in the distance.